Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Namaste Sushindavati Pastachati Sushindavati Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Chakvara Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavascha Shri Rupam Sadhujatam Sahagana Lavinatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaritam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavitam Shri Vishakam Vitam Sushindavati Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
September 5th, 2022, Hillsboro, North Carolina, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 39, Text 2. Kimalabhyam Bhagavati Prasane Srinikaitane Tatapi Tatpara Rajan Naivam Chanti Kinchana. Alabhyam is unattainable. Bhagavati,
the
Supreme Lord,
Prasane,
being satisfied,
Shri,
of the Goddess of Fortune,
Niketane,
the resting place, Tatapi,
nevertheless,
Tatparama,
those who are devoted to him,
Rajan,
O King Parikshit,
Na,
do not,
he,
indeed,
Vanchanti,
desire,
Kinchana,
anything.
BBT translation. My dear King,
what?
You're so excited. My dear King, what is unattainable for one who is satisfied? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune. Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. So there's no PBT purport. We're going to look at Krishna book and we'll look at Jiva Goswami's commentary. So, as Srila Prabhupada writes, Akura sat on his bed and began to reflect that all the desires he had contemplated while coming from Mathura to Vrindavan had been fulfilled. Remember, we talked about that the other day, how Akura was meditating on what he wanted, and he got each of those. Lord Krishna is the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. Being pleased with his pure devotee, he can offer whatever the devotee desires, but the pure devotee does not ask anything from the Lord for his personal benefit. Let's talk about from Krishna book. We're going to turn to, I'm only going to read Jiva Goswami's commentary. So not that Goswami has a more lengthy commentary, but I wanted to focus on the points that Jiva Goswami makes. He says, did he not have desires for dharma, artha, and moksha? So this is a question that somebody could be asking. What is not obtained by satisfying the Lord, since as Bhagavan, he shelters Lakshmi on his chest as a golden lion. The devotees do not desire anything except what is the mercy of the Lord, for this is the goal of the living entities. And he references Bhagavatam 10:38:27. O King, you know this certainly. Kim Alabhyam Bhagavati Prasanayashuni Ketane Tadavitat Prarajan Nahivan Shanti Kinshana. My dear King, what is unattainable for one who is satisfied with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune? Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. So, as I talk about many times, one of my favorite parts of Srila Prabhupada's books is the preface to the Nectar of Devotion, where Srila Prabhupada says that everything that everyone does is motivated by a desire for rasa. And rasa means a taste, a flavor, enjoyment, pleasure, and undermayabhya sat. We are pleasure-seeking beings. And I like to compare this in the military. They have heat-seeking missiles. You know, your aim may not be perfect, but within the missile, it's attracted to heat. It's attracted to the heat of the engine of the tank or the other airplane or something like that. And so it naturally goes to its target. So we are all like that. We are all looking for pleasure. And every symptom, everything we do is motivated like that. And of course, Rupa Goswami so nicely expands on the science of rasa, and that rasa has essentially 12 basic flavors, which are made up of 5 different parts, kind of like you have a smoothie, and it's made up of, you know, bananas and milk and sugar and whatever other things, ingredients you're putting, that you get a taste. So, Bali Maharaj, and again, this is something I quote from a lot because I think it's so important. When Bali Maharaj saw Vamadev, and Vamadev asked him, you know, for charity, Bali Maharaj said, "You should ask from me something so great that you will never have to ask anything else of anyone else ever." Now, of course, that statement of Bali Maharaj was one of the reasons that Vamadev took everything away from him, because he had this mood that I am God. Even though he was a devotee, he had become bewildered and thinking that I am God. But Krishna can actually do that. Krishna can actually give us something so great that it fulfills all of our desires for pleasure, all of our desires for rasa. And when we get that thing, we're thinking, I don't want to ask for anything at all. I'm completely satisfied. Of course, the prime example of this is Dhruva Maharaj. That Dhruva Maharaj had very big material desires, much bigger, I'm sure, than most of our material desires. I mean, I don't even want to run the temple, or to speak of the universe. You know, but he wanted to run the universe. He wanted to be more powerful than his father, Uttanapada, who was the emperor of the universe. He meant he wanted to have a position like that of Lord Brahma, greater than that of Lord Brahma. So what kind of material desire was that? Even Hiranyakashipu stayed subordinate to Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. But when he saw the Lord, he said, "Now I don't want anything anymore. I'm satisfied. I have everything I could want." Now, we don't find that everyone who interacts with the Lord reacts like this. So there are many, many, many persons who approach the Lord for something lesser than the greatest thing. And I've been meditating a lot recently on how in the Bhagavatam there's many examples of materialistic persons or even out-and-out demons who undergo different sadhanas and undergo different tapasyas and even see the Lord, but don't ask for the greatest thing. They don't access the greatest thing. They ask for something less. And for me, the prime example is Daksha in his birth as the son of the Prachetas, where he says these beautiful prayers. I mean, he performs a very deep sadhana, and he says these beautiful prayers, the Amsaguya prayers that we ourselves chant, and he sees the Lord. And he experiences bhava, he experiences ecstasy. And he's ostensibly doing service for the Lord in populating the universe, but his aim is his own lust. And even though he experiences the ecstasy of bhava, he becomes absorbed in his own lust. So much so that he commits offenses against Narada Muni. So it's not necessarily that just by encountering the Lord, one will understand what is the best thing to ask for. Another nice example is Kaliya, who when he sees the Lord, he appreciates the beauty of the Lord, but he still thinks, let me kill him. Right? So we have this, or Kaliyavana, who when he sees the Lord running away from the battle, he says, oh, this is the person that was described to me. This is the Lord. But his view is, let me kill him. And we find among the demigods, I mean, among Indra, of course, is astonishing how Indra asked the Lord, please return the umbrella and earrings of my mother, Aditi. Now, you know, you're not going to have a war for an umbrella, yeah? Will you have a war over an umbrella? I don't think so. So we should understand that this paraphernalia of the demigods, it's just like, you know, we all have one of these mobile phones, right? So with this mobile phone, I have mystic power. You all have mystic power in your mobile phones, right? I can press a few buttons, and then a package appears on my doorstep the next day. It's like a Prakti Siddhi. You follow? Prakti Siddhi, you just like reach out, and you can pick a mango. I just reach out, but I have to use my phone to do it. And then there'll be a box of mangoes on my door. And I can talk to somebody on the other side of the planet with my... I have all these mystic powers that I can do with my phone. So the demigods also have paraphernalia and weapons and things that can increase their own powers. And that's what they're fighting over. So anyway, Indra's asking, please return this paraphernalia of my mother. And the Lord, of course, kills his own son and rescues all these princesses and so forth. And he brings Indra back this paraphernalia. And then in that process, Satyabhama says, hey, you know, my co-wife got a flower. Can I have a tree? She's like, sure. Takes the tree, and then Indra goes to fight Lakshmi. So it's not always that we are wise enough, even if we see the Lord, and even if we're serving the Lord, to do so with the right motive. And we see that people come to any religion. I mean, one friend of mine was saying to me the other day, what is the use of religion? People also do bad things who are in religious movements. But people come to the Lord for many purposes, and even sometimes demons worship the Lord, or materialistic people worship the Lord for some material benefit. So I really want to look at what Jiva Goswami is talking about with Dharma Artha Kama Moksha, and finally Prema Kumartha Mahan. What is the actual thing to look for? So in doing this, some of you know that my friend Rukmini and I are writing a book on career dharma, and which is about the varnas. And we have a chapter specifically on what we call the cycle of frustration in work. So it starts with dharma, that we're looking for rasa in dharma, because dharma is the essence of a thing. Like Prabhupada would say, the dharma is sugar, it's sweetness. The dharma of salt is saltiness. It defines a thing. Therefore, we can say dharma is really authenticity. I like to refer to Bhagavad Gita 9.2, when people say, how do I know I'm making advancement? Rajavita Rajavityam Pavitram Idamitana Pratyaksha Bhagavam Dharmyam. You directly perceive dharma. You directly perceive what is truth, what is the essence of something. So, materially speaking, everything has its dharma. So like someone who's naturally inclined toward shudra work, they feel happiness in dharma when they provide beautiful help for the people that they serve. If you want to give happiness to someone doing shudra work, you say, thank you for making the world work in a beautiful way. And their whole heart will overflow with joy. We just had this Arangetram at this big hall that the parents rented, and there were the, you know, tech people, and there was like four or five people that worked there that provided the sound. And afterwards, I thanked, and I said that. I said, thank you for spreading beauty in the world in a wonderful, functional way. And it was like, you know, I'd given them the gift of the sun. So that is the dharma of Shudra that satisfies them. And the dharma of a Vaishya is having regenerative sustainability of resources. So a Vaishya wants to know that I am providing the wealth for society in a profitable way that's regenerative. If you're saying, if you're making sure that people can eat and people can have clothing and people can have what they need in a way that's sustainable and regenerative, then they are feeling, yes, I am satisfied with my dharma. And for the Kshatriyas, they want to have honorable justice for those in their care. If you say, look, you have brought honorable justice to the world. You've taken care of the poor and the destitute. You've made a prosperous kingdom. 195 times in Prabhupada's books and lectures, he has the term peace and prosperity. And then the Kshatriyas feel, yes, I have satisfaction in my dharma. And for the Brahmanas, if you say, you have brought truthful wisdom to the world, then they're like, yes, I'm satisfied with my dharma. But what do we want from dharma? From dharma, we want artha. From dharma, we want some kind of wealth. We want some kind of prosperity. And it's particularly significant in this verse that Krishna is described as carrying Lakshmi Devi on his chest. Because Lakshmi Devi is the source of her many different manifestations, as Lakshmi, Sita, Radharani, and so forth. She is the source of all kinds of prosperity. Often we think of prosperity as money, but money is a very inferior type of prosperity. People are interested in money when they're not getting natural prosperity from their dharma. And we could also talk about the dharma of the ashramas. You know, the brahmachari is happy when he's studying and learning. The grihastha is happy when they're producing nice children and honest wealth for society and reciprocation of service and love between husband and wife. The vanaprastha is happy when they're engaged in austerities, and the sannyasi is happy when they're purifying their existence. But what one wants from that is some kind of prosperity. And we each attracted to different types of prosperity. Some of us really like beauty. Some of us, if we're not surrounded by beauty, beauty of form, beauty of sound, we don't feel that we have a prosperous life. For other people, that's not so important. I remember visiting one sannyasi many years ago. He lived in a place for 8 years, and the walls were painted in India. The bottoms of the walls were one color, and the top of them, you know, they had like repainted, but in the wrong color. And I'm like, how do you tolerate it? And he's like, I don't even see it. And I was like, I would go completely mad. So for some people, you know, prosperity is in beauty. For some, it's in strength and in health. For other people, anybody would like to be healthy, but for some people, that's not what's most important to them. For some people, it's fame, which means community and family. You can't. Other people, they're introverts. They have one friend in the world. They don't really care so much about fame. For other people, it's Aishwarya, which comes from the word Ishvara. They want to be in a position of leadership. They want to have other people who follow them. They want to be able to guide people in order to feel prosperous. For some people, it's knowledge. They always want to learn new things. Other people, they don't really care about learning things. You know, it doesn't really matter to them, you know, where Mongolia is and whatever. It's just not interesting to them. And then there are other people for whom freedom and renunciation is a very high level of prosperity. And I know, I was told the story about Radhanaswami, how in his office, he sits on a mat on the floor and he just has some mats. And one disciple came, oh, Gurudev, I'd like to give you a chair. He said, don't take away my wealth. You know, so simplicity is also a kind of prosperity. And all of these prosperities are given by Lakshmi Devi. So the reason one does dharma, whether in one's occupation or in one's ashram, is to get these types of prosperity. Because when one gets the type of prosperity one wants, some people want Jnani Vairagya, some people want Sri and Virya, some people want Aishwarya and Yasha, some people want Yasha and Sri. And then the idea is that when we get these prosperities, we feel satisfied, our mind and senses feel satisfied, and we experience rasa. Now, if a person's in the wrong occupation or in the wrong ashram, then their work and their ashram will not give them the kind of prosperity that they enjoy. And for those people, they have to get money and try with that money to get the kind of prosperity they enjoy. Does that make sense to anybody? So if a person has a great need for fame in their life, they're supposed to get that naturally through their work and their family. where they're ushering. But if they're in the wrong place, then it's not, they're not getting the kind of enjoyment that they want. But then they get money and they try to buy that kind of enjoyment. So money is an inferior way. And then once you get this enjoyment from your body and your senses, there's something that happens. First of all, a lot of times people are in the wrong situation, so they don't get the kind of prosperity and enjoyment that they actually desire. But even if you're in the right situation, as Justine Prabhupada said today, how all of our enjoyment is a dream. He was saying whether you're being chased by a tiger in a dream, or whether you're getting a lot of money in a dream, it's all a dream. And so even if you're doing properly your dharma, that's giving you your artha, that's giving you your kama, existentially one will not feel satisfied. So even people who have exactly properly situated in dharma, properly getting the right kind of artha, the right kind of prosperity that's perfect for their psychophysical nature, and their bodies and minds are satisfied with that prosperity, they're still not going to be satisfied. Because we're not in the body and the mind, not in the Deha and the Manasya. So then the next tendency is for moksha. Let me get free of all this. And some people join, you know, political freedom movements or social freedom movements to try for moksha. Or they quit their job, or they divorce their family, or they move to another place. They try to get freedom that way. Or they come to religion for freedom, just like people come to religion for dharma, or they come to religion for artha, or they come to religion for kama. They come to religion for moksha. But that doesn't satisfy the person either. Because we're looking for rasa. So just giving everything up doesn't give us rasa. And so that a person goes back to dharma again, and they go through this cycle. You know, oh, let me try again. Let me try again. Let me try another life. Well, I'll have a different kind of dharma. You know, I like to quote the famous actress Julia Roberts, who's become, she calls herself a Hindu, and she actually has a guru who's a Krishna worshiper. And she says, you know, this life, I'm always at the front of the room, I'm very famous, she's enjoying, right? She's, what does she have? Shri, she definitely has Yasha. Yeah? Jeffrey has Aishwarya. She says, I don't like it. She said, next time I want to be a quiet person in the back. You know, so that's what happens. We go through this cycle over and over and over again. And many, many persons go to God for that. Prabhupada likes to tell the story, we have one of our reading books of this, of the woman who's collecting sticks. So at Govardhan, we're at Govardhan, we always see ladies collecting sticks that I assume they use in their own cooking, but they probably also sell. And of course, the sticks around Govardhan are very thorny. So there's usually a group of three of them together, and you know, they have this little cloth donut thing on their head. And they're collecting these thorny, that they don't have, you know, they're not going to Home Depot and getting like thick gardening gloves. They just have their bare hands and they're trying to pick up these thorny, and the sticks are long. They're like a yard, you know, meter long. And they're trying to pick up these thorny sticks with their bare hands, and they're tying them together and putting them on their head. And now they've put a big fence around Govardhan. And there's only a few places you can get in. There's only a few doors. And the doors are often locked, but the way they're locked so that the chain has a gap. And so a human who's not obese can like fit in the gap. So you have they're trying to get out of the gap in the doorway with these yard-long sticks balanced on their head. And remember, the sticks are full of thorns, so it's hard to like, you know, you're not going to just like put your hand up and hold them. And they're serious thorns. You know, they're really, really serious thorns. And so they're trying to get through this little gap that's maybe a foot and a half wide, and they help each other. It's one reason they go in groups of three. They help each other to try to do this very difficult job. So it's not uncommon for the sticks to fall. So there was one lady gathering sticks, and the sticks fell. And she's like, God, save me, God, save me, God, save me. And the Lord actually appeared before her. What would you like? And she said, please help me put the sticks back on my head. Or Prabhupada also tells a story of a man who had a job of pulling a boat. And he would walk by the shore where the water is more shallow, and he would pull a boat by walking on the shore. And somebody asked him, you know, what would you do if you became a rich man? And he said, I would put mattresses on the bottom of the river so it wouldn't hurt my feet when I'm walking on the... So we don't know what to ask for. And really, to be very, very honest, most of us don't know what to ask for. Even though we're in the Hare Krishna movement, even though we have Srila Prabhupada as our founder, Acharya, you know, our tendency is to ask for things in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. That is our strong tendency, as the tendency in all religions of the world, that we're just going for those things. And the Bhagavatam is full of stories like this. You know, in the classes that I'm giving in Hawaii, on the internet, obviously, we've just finished a story about Nidra and Purvachiti. And I always wondered, why is this story in the Bhagavatam? But recently I was realizing the Bhagavatam is showing us also what not to do. These very, very elevated people, far more elevated than we call Kali-Yuga humans, they're really highly elevated. The quality of their sadhana, I could not approach the quality of the sadhana of these people. Anybody here able to do the sadhana that Hiranyakashipu did? I can't even think of it. You know, I'm so proud that I always chanted my 16 rounds, thank you, Krishna. And I followed four regulated principles, you know, it's like, peacefully. You know, these people are so qualified. And Agnitra attained the Brahma-Bhuta platform. He no longer saw bodies. He didn't even recognize that the woman was a woman. He just saw, all he saw was his soul. He obtained the Brahma-Bhuta platform, and he used it simply to get an upsara wife so he could go to Pitruloka. So we see this over and over and over. You know, are we really convinced? And therefore we also have these stories in the Bhagavatam, that there is something that actually Savaikum sam parodha, you told Bhaktir, ahojiki apratiyata, yadyatma supersuyuti. There is something that will not put us in this cycle of frustration, of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, that really will satisfy us, and satisfy us to the extent that we are simply satisfied with our own loving service. I remember, this is a point my daughter made to me years ago, how Krishna gives this benediction to the gopis. He says, I can't repay you, Aparyana. He says, just be satisfied with your own loving service. We get a little idea of this. All of us have felt a little love for someone or something in our life, yes? We felt something. Sometimes that wasn't lust, that wasn't selfish, that was actually we get a little glimmer of love. And when we get this glimmer, we actually start to taste rasa, isn't it? We actually feel satisfied. So imagine if we had love for the perfect person. You know, in this world, when we love a kitten, or we love a husband, or we love whatever, it's not capable of satisfying us. And we're not capable of sustaining pure love in materialistic consciousness. But if we could open up, Prabhupada over and over again says that this pure love is part of who we are. It's not something to be gained from another source, he says. It's already within us. We were talking about how dharma is the authentic nature of the thing. The authentic dharma of the soul, Jivarasvara Paya Krishna Nichidas, is to be a servant, but not a servant like a paid servant or an unwilling servant, but a servant motivated only by love. And that's what Akura is. I mean, on one hand, we could say the residents, Sinatra Goswami's commentary on this verse, just talks about how the residents of Vrindavan didn't like the quarter very much. When I was in Hungary, I remember Srila Ramaraj was talking about Krishna's appearance and so forth, and when he got to the point of Akura taking Krishna out of Vrindavan, and everybody went, boo! So, you know, there's a mood that we don't like Akura, but Akura's a pure devotee, and he's also full of love for Akura. Rupa Goswami gives him several times as an example of a pure devotee in his Bhakti Sanyasa Sindhu, and he's facilitating also the desire of the Lord to reciprocate with his devotees in Mathura. The Lord loves them as well, and they love the Lord as well, and they're in separation from the Lord. And Akura is so satisfied with his love, with his own love, with his own service, that he doesn't need anything from the Lord. Nothing. He just to love the Lord is enough to be filled with his own love for the Lord and to be doing some service. And service, what service does the Lord need? If he's not the goddess of fortune on his own chest, he's already full of all prosperity. He owns prosperity personified, you could say. And he's the Kila Rasamrita Murti. He's the reservoir, Prabhupada called it, the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna is experiencing every possible combination of these these 12 rasas and all of their subsidiary parts, constantly, every possible unlimited combination, constantly, in reciprocation with unlimited jivas, each of which has a particular type of relationship with him and a particular flavor of rasa. So, and he's the source of everything. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, you know, my mother would give me money to buy my father a birthday present, and then she would take me to the store and she would help me pick out something my father would like and bring me home and help me wrap it and I would give it to my father. So, you know, and my father could have bought it himself. He didn't need me to buy it. So what service can we do? What is the meaning of service? What does that mean? I'm serving the Lord. He's supplying. It's like when I travel, I take my shilas with me and I take care of them every day. One of the difficult things to make sure you have when you travel is fresh flowers. I mean, you can offer dry tulsi leaves, but I'm not going to offer dried flowers. And sometimes I'm in a situation where getting flowers is not so easy. But I've noticed that somehow or other I've always gotten flowers. And I've decided that the reason for that is that I told them, I want to give you flowers every day, so they arrange it. They arrange all the ingredients for their own service. Haven't we seen that? Yeah? So what does it mean, we're doing service? Our service is our love. Bhatra Krishna Palantra Yome Vatya Prajitam Bhatya Paritamashami Chvaitatam. Krishna doesn't really need our strawberries and our plumerias. But what's pleasing him is our love, and the reason our love is pleasing to him is that he knows that our love for him fully satisfies us and he wants us to be happy. Just like any normal parent. What do they want for their children? That the children are happy. What does one want for a friend? That my friend is happy. Krishna wants us to be happy. That's his pleasure. And he knows that we are happy when we are in our natural position to be filled with love. And then these things from the material dharma, artha, kama, moksha appear as nothing. They have no attraction. They have no glitter. They appear like one time I saw a picture of an animal trying to eat a cardboard pitcher of food. You know, some little puppy trying to lick a picture, a photograph of food. So it's like that. The dharma, artha, kama, moksha, they appear to us as a photograph, as a piece of cardboard. So that's what we should be asking for. That's what we should be asking for in our japa, in our kirtan, in our worship, in our cooking. Please let me love you. Please let me serve you with love. Please awaken my heart to real love. and then you will be happy. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Anybody? Should we provide key?
Yeah.